Good evening, folks. On this 15th day of December 2018, I'm your host, Mark Hall, and our challenge for the next hour will be to try to wrap up a week where arguably the main news is the continuing saga of both a world and the United States still under attack from the international communist, socialist, fascist, fill-in-the-blank, deep state swamp critters. There was, of course, plenty of lawlessness on parade, especially from a coup against the sitting president still in progress, but there were at least a few bits of good news that came out during the week, even some that came out as we headed into Friday. So let's start there. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, in an interview with Breitbart News, told them it was an extraordinary moment on Thursday when the U.S. Senate passed a resolution to invoke the War Powers Act for the very first time ever, expressing congressional disapproval. Imagine that, folks. Congressional disapproval of yet another war. This time it was against U.S. backing of the Saudi Arabian war in Yemen. The resolution passed 56-41 over the objections of a number of establishment rhinos and pretty much all of the usual neocons, but with strong support from genuine conservatives like Senator Paul and Mike Lee of Utah, as well as even some grassroots leftists like Bernie Sanders. Said Dr. Paul, quote, "I think it's an extraordinary moment because for decades, maybe for 50 or 60 years, Congress has been relinquishing and abdicating their power to indicate whether the country is at war. So this is a big step, and it's a big majority voting to say, you know what? Declaration of war comes from Congress, and we don't approve of the war in Yemen now. So that is a big step," he continued, "and it really came across the aisle, both sides coming together. It's a pretty big deal. The historic nature of this being the first time since Vietnam is huge." And what he means is that this is the first time since the U.S. Congress passed the so-called War Powers Act in 1973, overriding a presidential veto from Richard Nixon in the wake of the highly unpopular Vietnam War, that the Senate has actually ever even invoked the War Powers Act. There's also good, or at least very interesting news, out of socialist France, too, where not only is the unpopular Macron under increasing threat to actually be kicked out one way or another, but more and more French seem to be waking up to the threat of the Islamic invasion and what the UN is trying to do to them. A group of French military generals, says a piece from Paul Joseph Watson, have written an open letter to Emmanuel Macron accusing the French president of committing treason by signing that UN migration pact. This, of course, is the so-called non-binding compact that not only endorses the continuing invasions, but declares that any criticism against it must be treated criminally as hate speech. Maybe those French generals figure they better speak up while they still can. The letter, written by General Antoine Martinez and signed by 10 other generals, as well as an admiral and a colonel, and the former French Minister of Defense, Charles Milon, too, warns Macron that the move strips France of more sovereignty and provides yet another reason for, quote, "an already battered people to revolt." And the open letter goes on to accuse Macron of being guilty of denial of democracy or treason against the nation for signing that pact without bothering to put it before the people. It points to the impossibility of integrating too many people in France and in other places, and in addition to totally different cultures, these are folks who have, quote, "regrouped in the last 40 years in areas that no longer submit to the laws of the Republic," says the letter, adding that such mass immigration is literally erasing France's civilizational landmarks, and that as a result, European countries are in danger of having their, quote, "culture and identity crushed." That is, if it hasn't already happened. I guess we ought to follow that up with a bit of related, and perhaps even better news, out of Brazil, where the new Trump of the tropics, as he's been referred to, President Jair Bolsonaro of Brazil, has announced that his country, like at least a few others that have awakened to the threat of invasion by migration, will not sign the UN Migration Pact. So in waking up to the level of globalist insanity going on in the world, he joins, of course, the United States, thanks to a president that hasn't yet already been overturned by the coup already in progress, as well as Poland, Estonia, the Czech Republic, Austria, Hungary, Switzerland, Croatia, Bulgaria, Australia, Israel, Lithuania, and Latvia. And given the Yellow Vest movement spreading across Europe, I think there are more than a few who would suggest that if France and a few others would begin to wake up to the same reality, there might be a lot less tension there. No, that's not what the Waste Stream wants you to believe. But as we keep seeing, there's more to this protest in France than politically correct fuel taxes. And one more bit of good news, although on a completely different subject, before we change gears that way. This one comes from the Mojave Desert. The Daily Mail out of Britain had a lot of nice video and pictures, courtesy of Virgin Galactic, Sir Richard Branson, and a fellow that I had the good fortune to get to know a few years back, Bert Rutan and his company. For the first time, Virgin Galactic's new tourism rocket, it's called Spaceship 2, after the original, and it was launched at altitude from its mothership, White Knight 2, a bit after 10 a.m. Eastern time. Its rocket engine burned for 60 seconds during the Thursday test, bringing the craft to a final altitude of 51.4 miles, above the accepted 50-mile threshold for awarding astronaut wings to the two pilots on board, and they carried some NASA payloads as well, simulating carrying commercial passengers for the first time. It really is nice to see people with skills, intelligence, guts, and vision taking their own risks and pushing back a new frontier. We do have to get back to the not-so-good news eventually, and since we've already broached the subject of the Islamic invasion, at least in Europe, gun control mecca that it is, with a lot of gun-free killing zone, target-rich environments. In the most widely reported case this week, though, it was the almost gun-free killing zone of France, pretty close to the border with neighboring Germany, both of which have pretty well been gun-free since that was accomplished by Adolf Hitler, at least when it comes to peons and victims. And as we keep finding out, and more keeps coming out on this story as well, gun control is the gift that keeps on giving to the criminals, that is, not the ones who have been lied to about how wonderful it ought to be. And the same evidently goes for the Islamic invasion. At yet another Christmas market, this time in Strasbourg, northeastern France, Tuesday night, a 29-year-old man who shouted Allahu Akbar killed at least two people and injured 13 others as he opened fire on the crowds. And he's known to be part of Islamic networks in Strasbourg and has a lengthy criminal record, including no less than 27 convictions that they know of, as well as lengthy prison sentences in Germany, France, and Switzerland. Turns out he was well known to police and security services in no less than three countries. And if you haven't heard this story before, folks, you haven't been paying attention. The French Secret Service had been warned that the man had become radicalized on one of his stints in prison. They placed him on a designated threat to the state watch list in 2014, but that fact hadn't been communicated to German authorities, who kept the very same man in jail for burglary the next year. And I guess when it comes to police reporting about Islamic terrorism, that shouldn't surprise anybody. Yesterday morning, here's the real irony, folks, police searched his flat in connection with yet a different crime, and they found an arsenal of weapons that Achtung ist verboten, including a grenade. But aw, shucks, the Islamic terrorist just didn't happen to be home at the time of the raid, so he was able to go on and kill and maim more than a dozen people, all conveniently pre-disarmed. Oh, and one quick addendum on that story. Paul Joseph Watson for Prison Planet reports that a leader of the Muslim Council of Britain has expressed his disappointment at the media for daring to accurately report on a man screaming Allahu Akbar as he blew people away during that attack that killed a whole bunch of people in Strasbourg. Quote, "This matters, and it's wrong," said Meek Dog Versi. "How dare some in the media start pointing out the truth about the so-called religion of peace?" There's a lesson here, folks, or half a dozen, but if history is any guide, and it is, it'll be ignored by the press and police in socialist Europe and turned upside down by the socialists, communists, and progressives in the deep state swamp here, who intend to bring more of exactly that kind of terror to a theater near you again real soon now. I guess, folks, these stories are getting kind of old. Maybe from here on out I should just say, hey, yet another mass killing in a gun-free killing zone by an Allahu Akbar-shouting Islamic terrorist sanctioned by the deep state. Nothing to see here. Move along. Move along. Case in point, the increasingly terrorist swamp of New Jersey, where lawlessness already abounds, and they're taking it to a whole new level. Well, a Fourth Reich-style level, anyway. A new so-called law in New Jersey, and those of us who actually know what law is know that this isn't, Says Mike Adams, makes it a felony to possess a magazine capable of holding over 10 rounds. And this wildly, insanely unconstitutional so-called law instantly has criminalized hundreds of thousands of New Jersey citizens who once thought they were free people and legally acquired normal capacity firearms and magazines, including things like 17-round pistol magazines and 30-round rifle magazines, as tools of self-defense against the very same violent criminals, he notes, that are now protected by or are the Democrats who passed the magazine gun ban. And as if all of that wasn't bad enough, or indeed obvious enough, the New Jersey State Police have now admitted to Breitbart News that they won't rule out house-to-house Nazi-style enforcement of the new magazine ban. Meaning, yeah, you knew it, they planned to conduct house-to-house arrests and gun magazine confiscations. And, of course, that will be done at gunpoint. Further underscoring, says Adams, correctly, the entire purpose of the Second Amendment and the need for real free people, citizens, to arm themselves with the very things that Big Brother is so deadly serious about preventing them from having. Because they're tools against the tyranny that is, in fact, already here. As Breitbart.com reported, they contacted the New Jersey State Police on Monday to ask how they plan to enforce the newly enacted ban, and were told that the New Jersey State Police refused to rule out house-to-house checks. Rather, they said, quote, "We do not discuss enforcement strategies," unquote, because otherwise people might realize what's coming and arm themselves now. And here's the really nasty, ugly part of this, folks. They are fully intending to kill people to make their point and gather their data. And whether that means some New Jersey State cops acting under color of law or a whole bunch of the citizenry, I don't think they really give a you-know-what, because ultimately, let's just admit what this is, yet another massive beta test to see how far people can be pushed and what they will do so that the jackbooted thugs can hone their techniques for the next round. As Mike Adams and your host and just about everybody else who's honestly studied this has observed for decades, this is a repeat of Nazi Germany. It is always necessary to disarm the slaves and the intended victims before you're able to mass murder them. Although I guess we do have a new Congress that's promised they're willing to use nukes to accomplish that same end. And anybody naive enough to register their guns, which amounts with the time delay to pretty much the same thing as eventually just turning them in, is literally signing their own death warrant, not to mention their children and perhaps their children's children to boot. Adams basically concludes his piece by asking the appropriate question, just how much blood are the New Jersey State Police and their communist puppet masters willing to shed to establish their dictatorial regime of absolute power? And we know the answer. As much as they need to. Another major beta test site for the continuing war against what were once called God-given rights is what's known locally as the People's Republic of Boulder. Once upon a time, folks, thankfully a long time ago now, your host used to live there, and sadly, to say that it's literally a satanically oppressed region now is probably an understatement. But back in May, their over-the-top, literally nutcase, communist city council unanimously passed a ban on the sale or even possession of so-called assault weapons, along with high-capacity magazines and, of course, booga booga booga, bump stocks. But since, once upon a time, this was, after all, a western town, and a whole lot of the city's 100,000 or so residents actually thought they owned the now prohibited property, the communists decided to allow the good slaves to keep some of them. They grandfathered them in, provided, of course, they jumped through the right slave hoops. Wannabe slaves must have them certified by the police department and, of course, pay the proper bribes along with them, have a background check run, and just maybe you might be allowed to keep them for now. Oh, and you'd better have those papers, Achtung. But the deadline, pun intended, is coming up real soon. City attorney Tom Carr said that anyone who was found with a non-certified firearm in their possession after December 27th would be subject to a fine of up to $1,000 and, not or, 90 days in jail. And it goes without saying that they will steal the property and at least allegedly destroy it. Unless maybe, you can imagine in a criminal community like that, probably the right kind of people might find some that are worth keeping. It's not like they haven't demonstrated they're okay with theft, after all. Even the criminal attorney, though, admitted that there are a whole lot of people still in the People's Republic of Boulder who have strong feelings about the gang rape of what some of the older ones remember were once called God-given rights. He said, the folks who oppose these kind of bans, some of them suggest they're not going to cooperate. And no, he said, because he's ignorant of human history, he can't predict what people are going to do. But he's really without excuse, because at least one of those who's made it very clear he will not be complying is John Caldera. And I know the guy, a resident of Boulder, president of the free market think tank called the Independence Institute, and a well-known activist in the freedom fight in the Colorado Front Range. His letter of defiance was published in the Denver Compost back in May, and he said the following. My hometown of Boulder is about to define me as a criminal if I do not disarm or move. Let this column, he wrote, serve as public notice. I will not comply. Unquote. And it looks like John is not alone. As of this week, and the latest numbers your host could find, the Boulder PD has managed to certify only 87 of the now verboten tools of self-defense against exactly that kind of tyranny, meaning there are only, about 150,000 or so still to go in the next couple of weeks. And that means there really is some good news here, too. Even in the People's Republic of Boulder, folks, the compliance rate with tyranny is just barely over half of 0.1%. And yes, while there's some good news in there somewhere, don't think for a minute that the deep state isn't using this data as they plan their next move. And after a load of evil intent like that, we do need a bit of comic relief, even if it's more bitterly ironic than really funny. This week marked the 10th anniversary of another Al Gorean pseudoscience lie. If you're far enough left, you could call it a horribly failed prediction. But on December the 13th, 2008, junk pseudoscientist Al Gore predicted that the polar ice cap would be completely ice-free in 5 years. Yeah, that would be 5 years ago today, too. He made that prediction to a German audience and warned that the entire North polarized cap, sick, will disappear in 5 years. And it wasn't the first or only time he'd made that idiotic prediction. But any way you slice it, the North Pole should have been completely ice-free for half a decade by now. Instead, folks, what we have is actual, easily predictable, because it's a repeatable 200-year cycle, global cooling based on solar output. And those who were wise enough to bet against inveterate liars like Al Gore have had year after year by now to prepare. Those who haven't, of course, are running out of time. So I guess if there's even a remotely humorous moral to this particular story, it's that you're better off trusting a childhood lie like Santa Claus when it comes to the North Pole more than you are socialist government-paid whores masquerading as pseudoscientists, whether we're talking about your right to self-defense or simply physical survival. Let's turn next to an exercise that your host has always found really useful. I call it compare and contrast. And it's a great way to get some perspective on how lawlessness abounds. You already know that the man who proved there's no such thing as attorney-client privilege anymore, yeah, I'm talking about Robert Mueller, but also the sellout, Michael Cohen, was sentenced on Thursday, I guess you could say, for whoring. General Michael Flynn's life, goes to coverage from the Gateway Pundit, was shattered after he too was set up by corrupt deep state officials who proved that while the FBI can lie with impunity, anybody else who doesn't even remember what they've told those liars, or maybe if they change the 302 forms later, is likely to be set up. George Papadopoulos spent time in prison for serving the now president. He was targeted by the Obama deep state spies during the 2016 election for agreeing to be a Trump foreign policy expert. Who could forget Paul Manafort, successful businessman who once worked with Democrats like John Podesta and Tony Podesta, but now rots in an isolated prison cell while the potentially pedophile Podestas still walk free. President Trump's other children and children-in-law, including Ivanka Trump, Donald Trump Jr., and Jared Kushner, were harassed by deep state swamp critters for hours, and if the swamp gets its way, may face prison time. And they too were spied on during the 2016 election, we don't need no stinking warrants, by corrupt deep state officials. While Rick Gates, a former Trump campaign aide and Manafort's longtime junior business partner, was indicted on similar charges that don't quite rise to the level of treason or even arsonside like Manafort was. Concludes Jim Hoft, all of these people had the gall of challenging the system, and your host interjects here, of believing that elections still counted for something, which should be a clear warning to anybody that wants to do likewise. You will be punished, he says, because the deep state runs Washington. It has nothing to do with the people. By the way, folks, this is a good place to mention that the deep state has other ways of punishing people and silencing them as well. Here are names you probably don't remember quite as well because the press hasn't talked about them nearly so much. How about James McDougal, Whitewater partner of the Clinton crime family? There's a blast from the past, back in the Vince Foster days, along with names like Secretary Ron Brown and Danny Casolaro. But fast forward to more recent Arkansides, like the case of John Ash, who used a barbell, so he didn't get to testify. And, of course, people like Seth Rich, and more others than we have time remaining for today. But I do think that makes the point. And, I mean, come to think of it, should we count Muammar Gaddafi or not? For sure, though, we came, we saw, he died, and the deep state got 66 tons of his gold to boot. And we follow that up with this, submitted for your approval, courtesy of Christina Layla. Freedom Caucus Chairman Mark Meadows of North Carolina told Fox News' Martha McCallum that no less than 3 Clinton Foundation whistleblowers with thousands of pages of actual documents containing what are called explosive allegations will testify this week. Meadows noted that the investigation into the Clinton Foundation, which the Department of Justice designated John Huber to conduct, and which hasn't gotten much press attention, has 6,000 pages of evidence that they've gone through, associated with $2.5 billion of, I don't think it's right to call them donations, probably they're not all bribes, no doubt a whole lot of money laundering in there too. Anyway, $2.5 billion of slushiness, and who knows how many hundreds, tens of millions, or billions of dollars of potential improprieties. And I'll say it again, people who end up Arkansided don't really need to be paid hush money. And the real crime families in Washington seem to have learned that once they're silenced, unlike Stormy Daniels, they don't talk anymore at all. What your host is suggesting here, folks, is that there's not only a difference in criminality and on the persecution versus prosecution scale, as opposed to, well, whatever happens to people like Hitlery and Mueller and Comey, other than big bucks and book contracts, or even in hypocrisy. We're simply talking about entirely different universes of magnitude here. Here's another bit of funny and ironic news, courtesy of the Gateway pundit Jim Hoft, on Tuesday, as you probably remember. But if not, we'll get back to it in the next segment. The CEO of one of the world's most evil corporations, Google, Sundar Pichai, was called to testify before the House Judiciary Committee, and he did it with true Clintonian style. But during the questioning, Pichai dashed the hopes of Democrats everywhere, says Hoft, when he openly admitted that Russia spent only $4,700 on advertisements with them during the 2016 election. Yeah, you heard that right, folks. Not even Roundoff air for real Big Brother-style bucks. And Hitler herself spent $500 million in her failed bid to be king. I guess about all you can say concerning tiny sums like that is that it's more than Google wants to allow Alex Jones to make. Russia, though, also paid around $70,000, woo-woo, on Facebook ads to attract both Trump and Hitler supporters, and they spent about $6,000 on Facebook ads in the last 6 weeks of the election, which seemed to have had no real effect anyway. So we're looking at a total of maybe $75,000 spent by Russia to run ads on U.S. socialist media during the 2016 campaign season to promote both Donald Trump and Hitler. Meanwhile, the FBI, as we've been lied to but now know, spent a lot more for Russian dirt than Russia paid on genuine collusion. Unless, of course, you count the stuff that Hitler and Mueller and all their co-conspirators got for selling out United States uranium via something that they don't want to talk about, but you know the name, was called Uranium One. It makes you wonder how much it really cost to send Robert Mueller to the Kremlin with a load of uranium. The FBI also picked up the tab for the bogus Steele dossier, along with the DNC and the Hitler campaign. Hey, is that collusion? And they paid for Christopher Steele's travel and other expenses, too, while he was putting together that slanderous dossier used to undermine a duly elected administration in spite of their efforts, as part of what ought to be called, of course, the Trump coup. Hoft and people like Paul Sperry have more numbers than that in here as well. But the bottom line is, the FBI actually spent far more on fake news during the 2016 election than Russia ever did. Whether or not, the Clinton News Network wants you to know that. Back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm still your host, Mark Call. And let's continue this segment by kind of picking up that theme that really resonates through much of the news, literally worldwide, but especially, of course, in the deep state swamp. They basically demonstrate, as if we still had any doubt, that what was once called the rule of law literally doesn't have any place anymore when lawlessness abounds, whether we're talking about a banana republic or the deep state swamp. And no doubt about it, the out-of-control, literally criminally compromised Mueller witch hunt is about as good of an illustration of that as you're likely to find or be allowed to see. Let's kick off a quick review of the latest on that score via a couple of comments, also from Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, at his Sunday appearance on Meet the Depressed, where he noted he's not a fan of special prosecutors, sick, who go after presidents, saying, "It's very troubling what these special prosecutors can do. I tell people this, if a special prosecutor went after your life for the last 40 years, not you in particular, but anybody, I think they could drag up accusations, especially folks if they don't bear the burden of proof or even have to worry about facts." Back to Dr. Paul. So he said, "I'm absolutely against it, and I think it's a miscarriage of justice, and we should not have such going after one person. And if we get this way, and if we're going to prosecute people and put them in jail for campaign finance violations, we've become," he said, "a banana republic where every president gets prosecuted and everybody gets thrown in jail when they're done with office," unquote. Now, no doubt, folks, there are a whole lot of people who ought to be thrown in jail when they're done with office. The trouble is, the ones who ought to be thrown in jail are the ones doing the throwing. On next to former Assistant U.S. Attorney Andrew McCarthy, who argued in a column for Fox News that he believes prosecutors will attempt to indict President Donald Trump on campaign finance charges, judging from the sentencing memo in the Michael Cohen railroad job on Friday. The major takeaway, he said, of that 40-page sentencing memorandum filed by federal persecutors is that they're going after the president, and it's been obvious for some time, he added, that President Trump is the principal subject of the investigation, sick, still being conducted by the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. He talks about how the prosecutors are after the president for payments to two women to keep them quiet. After, one way or another, he seems to have paid them for sex. And you know what? Here I got to pause, because I can't help but think, with all the people we got running around that are guilty of major conflicts of interest, perjury, lying under oath, and breaking oaths, obstruction of justice, bribery, and of course more than a bit of murder to cover all of that up, absolutely undermining national security, even committing outright treason, people are worried about whether or not the president paid for sex decades ago and then paid for somebody to do what they probably, if they were a good hooker, would have done anyway, and that's keep their mouth shut about it? Good grief. And all of that really does speak volumes. So here we are. These really wonderful paragons of virtue are now going to come after this president because Russia didn't go anywhere for campaign finance violations. When in fact, it seems like everything he did here, having to do with the hookers and paying them to keep their mouth shut, was paid for out of his own pocket, probably with pocket change to boot. Because the guy is, after all, a billionaire, and able to pay for things like that, or they'd probably have been able to kill him by now anyway. All of this inspires your host to hearken back to a story that came out late last week, entitled, at least by Zero Hedge's summary, quote, "I know where all the bodies are buried." This from the CFO of the Clinton Foundation. One Andrew Kessel, who, according to The Hill's John Solomon, made the admission to investigators from MDA Analytics, LLC, a firm run by, quote, accomplished ex-federal criminal investigators that have been probing the Clinton Foundation for quite a while. And basically, what this guy says is, whether we're talking bribery, corruption, tax evasion, donation fraud, or, yeah, probably more than a bit of campaign finance violations, the criminally corrupt Clinton Foundation may be the biggest criminal money laundering organization in history. Kessel told MDA that, quote, there is no controlling Bill Clinton. He does whatever he wants and runs up incredible expenses with foundation funds, according to MDA's account of the interview. Bill Clinton, he continued, mixes and matches his personal business with that of the foundation. Many people within the foundation have tried to caution him about this, but he does not listen, and there really is no talking to him. Unquote. MDA compiled Kessel's statements along with over 6,000 pages of evidence from whistleblowers that they've been working with separately and which they secretly filed over a year ago with, oh yeah, guess who? The Federal Bunglers of Investigations and the IRS. And MDA alleges that the Clinton Foundation engaged in all kinds of illegal activities and may owe millions in unpaid taxes and penalties and should be investigated for a whole litany of reasons. And yeah, don't hold your breath. Here's one more that's being called a Daily Caller exclusive. The Department of Just Us wants to keep the reasons for that almost unreported FBI raid against a whistleblower who actually outed various Clinton Foundation secrets secret. And in case you've forgotten, or rely on the fake news media to keep you informed, 16 FBI agents raided the home of Dennis Kane in Union Bridge, Maryland on November 19th for about 6 hours, took all kinds of documents that he'd already turned over to the FBI Inspector General and Congress, even though they knew he was a recognized, protected whistleblower. And it does seem like they wanted to send a message. And now the problem is the Department of Just Us is refusing to unseal court documents that might reveal what the FBI's rationale was for that raid. Obviously, they don't want us to know. And does that sound even a bit familiar? Let's throw just a few comments into the mix next from Victoria Tenzing at Fox News about the up-to-his-armpits chief witch hunter, the criminally compromised Robert Mueller. Does anybody remember General Michael Flynn? Yeah, there was criminal conduct there, but it wasn't committed by him. It had to do with leaking the contents of classified telephone conversations between Trump's man and the Russian ambassador Sergei Kislyak, and the criminally prohibited revelation of Flynn's identity as a party to conversations that he was supposed to be doing anyway as part of his job. Flynn, too, was accused of lying to the world's foremost and only permitted liars, the Federal Bunglers of Investigation. And that entire setup was enabled by Obama holdover and acting Attorney General Sally Yates in a bit of kabuki theater we're now more than familiar with. Tenzing asks a question that I'd say is kind of obvious, but certainly important anyway. Why, she says, has Mueller ignored all the crimes of the Obama administration? Do we really have to ask? The best defense is a good offense. They're doing it to stay out of prison or off the gallows. And there's no denying it's a coup, increasingly successful, and the goal is to complete the overthrow of the constitutional government of the United States. At this rate, we're catching up with Paris real quickly. Let's take a quick look next at a couple of stories to demonstrate one more time that so many of the major conspiracy theories that we've been talking about for a long time were also right all along, starting with one that goes to the very heart of the term conspiracy theory, even the movie of the same name. A CIA program, long denied, ultimately admitted, called, among other things, MKUltra. And it's all about, yes, mind control, that Goebbels and Hitler were hot to trot on, Joseph Mengele worked on, Operation Paperclip brought all the wonderful results here, and from there, as the CIA isn't going to tell you, the rest is history. Just not necessarily in the books. It is, though, slowly leaking out. Here's one more set of newly released MKUltra docs, finally getting a fair amount of alternative press coverage, at least. The one I'm looking at comes from Max Slavo at SHTF Plan, about how the CIA made, among other things, remote-controlled dogs with brain surgery. Newly released documents provided under a Freedom of Information Act request by the Black Vault founder, John Greenwald, showed that the CIA made 6 remote-controlled dogs as part of their MKUltra behavior modification or mind control program. A long time ago, of course, so it's old technology by now, or you wouldn't be hearing about it, that were, quote, field operational and controllable by human beings. Yes, it's been 65 years that the CIA has been working on MKUltra and follow-ons, and the public is just now finally getting a more broad and detailed look at just how far those attempting these gruesome experiments were willing to go in order to gain control of our thoughts. This story is about surgically implanting electrodes in the brains of dogs in order to control them, but there are all kinds of other indications that it wasn't just dogs, certainly human beings were the goal, and it wasn't just electronics. There were also drugs, hypnosis, and propaganda methods, among who knows what else, but almost certainly including electromagnetic radiation, also high on the agenda. Understand again, folks, this is really old stuff at this point, but it just confirms again how long we've been lied to and about how much. Max Lavo's story concludes by saying that another of the documents revealed perhaps even more disturbing new details on the use of experimental mind-control drugs on unwilling human beings, suggesting experimentation with the use of such drugs not only on inmates in prison hospitals, but also drugging suspects awaiting trial. According to Sputnik News, it gets even worse. Other documents reveal experimentation with hypnotic speaking techniques to enable mind control over what they called large audiences, unquote. And just maybe, folks, that goes a long way towards explaining even more about the fake news networks and their buddy-buddy relationships with the so-called intelligence community. Who knows? Maybe CNN really stands for controlling neural networks, after all. There's a sad lesson in this next story, too. The once decent and upstanding organization, once known as the Boy Scouts of America, has been around for the first 2 world wars and seen the age of the airplane and now the age of AI. But they couldn't survive the destruction of truth, justice, and the American way. Some call it the SJW convergence. As the Wall Street Journal says, the Boy Scouts of America is considering filing for bankruptcy protection as it faces dwindling membership, gee, wonder why, and escalating legal costs related to lawsuits over how it handled allegations of sexual abuse. Who could imagine that allowing gay scoutmasters could possibly be a problem? Leaders of the Boy Scouts, once one of the country's largest youth organizations, have hired law firm Sidley Austin LLP for assistance with a possible Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing, according to people familiar with the matter. I guess you could almost say sick, simper, sellouts. Google CEO Sundar Pichai pretty obviously perjured himself repeatedly before Congress on Tuesday. Although, in fairness, the guy's also horribly self-deceived, so arguably not all of it was knowing lies.
But I'm sure he had a little bit of the Clintonian truth mixed in there, too. Yeah, don't be evil, but we decide what's evil, don't you know? And our standards may be different than yours.
In case you're curious, Pichai, who was testifying under oath before the House Judiciary Committee, repeatedly told Congress critters that all kinds of things that they did, no, they weren't political, and no, we don't track your location, and no, we don't Googleize your search results to make them more politically correct. Well, of course, not unless you allow us to and give us permission, like by using one of our products, whether you know it or not. He also told Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio that the detailed description of voter turnout efforts in the leaked emails published recently by Breitbart were not correct, in spite of the fact that they certainly sounded that way and were sent by a high-level executive to other key executives. Jordan highlighted 2 specific lines from those emails in which Google's head of multicultural marketing, Eliana Murillo, described Google's get-out-the-vote efforts, saying, quote, "We pushed to get out the Latino vote with our features in key states," adding, "We supported partners like Voto Latino to pay for rides to the polls in key states." Pichai commented that we're very concerned whenever there are allegations like that, but Jordan interrupted him, asking him to actually answer the question, like whether or not the "we" used in both of those sentences refers to the company Google. And why do they emphasize key states as opposed to all states? And extraordinarily, note the stories, particularly given that he was under oath, the Google CEO repeatedly denied it. And, of course, he short-circuited and sidestepped all kinds of other questions throughout the three-and-a-half-hour session. All of his statements, says Breitbart, is particularly significant for a couple of reasons. First, because it's clearly a lie. Murillo's email, which Breitbart published in full earlier this year, and again recently, clearly refers to efforts by Google to boost Latino turnout in key states. And secondly, even Pichai concedes that such activities would be partisan, even though for the rest of the session he seemed to deny knowing what that might mean. So, once it can be shown, they observed, that Murillo was in fact telling the truth, and nobody argued about it at the time, but that was, of course, before the emails were leaked, Pichai has no way to claim that the get-out-the-vote efforts were not, in fact, very partisan. Representative Jim Jordan summarized the testy and not particularly satisfying exchange this way, quote, "So she," meaning the executive, "just made it all up out of thin air the day after the election, wrote this email to your key executives, and it's not true?" Pichai, of course, promised to follow up. Yeah, sure. To which Jordan correctly said, "I don't want the follow-up. I want the real answers right here in this committee," unquote. There's a lot more to the testimony. We'll get to some of that in a minute. But I do think a couple of other related items are pertinent today. Here's one from Chris Menahan at Information Liberation entitled, "F.U. Leakers." This is what Jack Paulson, a former researcher at Google, said that a senior engineer who took the microphone at an all-hands meeting before he left yelled at his colleagues. Evidently, they were pretty upset at things like that Murillo memo getting leaked. The former senior Google employee who quit over their controversial plans to launch a Big Brother public-private partnership and search engine in China painted a picture of a company whose upper echelons are obsessed with stopping leaks to the exclusion of almost anything else. In comments reported on Saturday by the Times of London, Paulson cited as an example of the anti-leak culture that aforementioned unnamed senior engineer and his not-quite-printable comments. He also said the campaign against leaking had become a way for Google to avoid tackling the real reason staff was leaking in the first place, including concerns over that Chinese search engine project, codenamed Dragonfly, or their work for the U.S. military. He doesn't mention it. Maybe they're not so concerned about all their work for NSA and the various so-called intelligence agencies, much less the propaganda agencies in their own Ministry of Truth. Similarly, InfoWars is now reporting that there are no less than 60 human rights groups that have taken aim at Google over their development of that censorship-inspired search engine custom-made for China, a.k.a. Dragonfly, arguably because it's all about restricting information on things that the Chinese government and its public-private partners consider verboten, like human rights and other subjects forbidden by the communist Chinese and clearly Google-sympathetic government. According to The Intercept, the letter said the following. A prototype for the censored search engine was designed to blacklist broad categories of information about human rights, democracy, and peaceful protest, and it would link Chinese user searches to their personal cell phone number and store people's search records inside the data centers of a Chinese company, a front company, if you will, in either Beijing or Shanghai, which would be accessible, obviously, to those in the know and in the need to know. Things like the Chinese Authoritarian Communist Party and its government. But maybe that is a repetition. If the plan proceeds, it said there's a real risk Google would directly assist the Chinese government, their public-private partner, in arresting or imprisoning people simply for expressing their views online, making the company, they noted, complicit in human rights violation. And there's more. You've probably already heard it. The one thing you're not going to hear is much honest comment on it from people like Google CEO Sundar Pichai. Many stories this morning go on to point out that one of the big whoppers told by that guy under oath had to do with his testimony in which he claimed that users could opt out of Google's location tracking services. Well, unless they don't want you to. A claim that the Associated Press has already found previously to be false. During his appearance in front of that House Judiciary Committee for a hearing that was ironically entitled Transparency and Accountability, Examining Google and Its Data Collection Use and Filtering Practices, Pichai claimed that users had control of what information Google stored about them. That's my story. Oh, that's my story. My story, and I'm sticking to it. Yeah, you have control, folks. Don't buy a smartphone, don't do a Google search online, and don't basically have anything to do with anybody that you know is associated with Google in any way, shape, or form. Oh, and good luck doing that. Said the perjurer, again under oath, quote, "For Google services, you have a choice of what information is collected, and we make it transparent." Pichai added, quote, "We give clear toggles by category where they can decide whether that information is collected, stored, or, more importantly, if they decide to stop using it," unquote, to which almost every honest reporter now says, nope, we know that's categorically untrue. The Associated Press confirmed it back in August, noting that Google is tracking the location of its users even when the location tracking option is turned off. And furthermore, folks, we know that you can turn the phone off, and they actually have backup batteries that you can't get to that will give the location information when somebody with the right backdoor password enables it, regardless of what toggles you think you've set. And yes, Big Brother is listening, too. Even some Android applications store your location data, even if you've used a privacy setting that you think prevents Google from doing so. Some Google apps, the story continued, automatically store timestamp location data without asking, and guaranteed that if Big Brother wants it, Big Brother gets it. The story also noted that Google's Map application stores a snapshot of your location whenever you open it. Daily weather updates on Android also record not only your rough location, but Google searches can pinpoint and store your precise lat long down to a single square foot. Of all the stuff, though, that your host found online about the whoppers being told in Congress yesterday, this story from the Daily Mail, though, really caught my eye and amused me. The headline says, Google CEO comes under fire from Republican congressmen who say that his search results have a liberal bias, gee, do you think? And here's the funny part. Even a Democrat from California, no less, revealed that if you Google the word idiot, you get all kinds of pictures of Donald Trump. And no, your host interjects, amazingly, not a single one of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or even Mad Maxine Waters or Adam Schiffless. Yes, as the subheading here, lawmakers question Pichai about Google's handling and protection of user data, privacy practices, their disinformation campaigns, and their plans for Big Brother public-private partnership with not only the United States, but Communist China. And both Republicans and Democrats, they say, asked about concerns that conservative voices are being stifled online and in search results. Said Pichai, lying through his teeth, quote, "Our algorithms have no notion of political sentiment," unquote. And I'll give him that one, folks, by adding this. No, they simply share our non-political inherent prejudices that are so ingrained in us that we're not even aware of how nasty they are. In other words, their AI algorithms are way, way leftist, just like those who wrote them. He also had the chutzpah, or idiocy, to say this. And we'll get to the idiocy part in just a minute here, quote, "We approach our work without any political bias," unquote. And again, I think his bias is so inherent, he just doesn't have a clue how pervasive it is. But still, both Republicans and even Democrats push Pichai on the issue, and when the socialists can see it, you know it's beyond the pale. One of them, Democrat Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren from California, whose district houses Google's employees, asked why, when she Googled the word idiot right there in the congressional hearing, images of President Trump appeared en masse. And she said the following, quote, "Manipulation of search results, I think it's important to talk about how search works," she said. "Right now, if you Google the word idiot, under the images that show up, a picture of Donald Trump comes up." Well, no, whole bunches of pictures of Donald Trump come up. "I just did that," she said. Pichai gave her a long technical answer, says the Daily Mail. And when I worked at IBM, folks, we had a term for that. It was called baffling them with bullshit. Republican Congressman Lamar Smith, said the Daily Mail, pushed Pichai hard on the allegations of bias. He got a similar baffle him with you-know-what answer, and said, "I disagree. I think humans can manipulate the process. It is a human process at its base." The story even says Republican Representative Louis Gohmert used his entire 5 minutes of time not to question Pichai. By that time, I guess it was obvious what would be the point, but to lecture him. Quote, "You're so surrounded by liberality that hates conservatism, that hates our Constitution, he said. You don't even recognize it. You run off conservatives, you embrace liberals. Unquote. Here's the line from this story that I'll wrap it up with. A Democrat named Ted Lieu got into the bias debate, says the Daily Mail, and made this particularly asinine and condescending comment. Quote, "Let me just conclude here by stating the obvious," said Lieu. "If you want positive search results, do positive things. And if you don't want negative search results, don't do negative things." Unquote. In other words, folks, don't be evil. Be like Google, because we decide what's good and who's naughty and who's nice. And if we don't like you, we do track you. Yes, Big Brother and his partners are listening and watching. So yeah, folks, lawlessness definitely abounds.